Welcome to the American Classroom Podcast, where we discuss the role of education in building a civil society. I'm Jared Taylor, here with my host, Lindsay Croslin, and we're excited to have Jason Barney here today to talk about music education. And so we're excited to share this with you. So here's part one. We're going to start by teeing this up with a great clip from the great music education advocate in the U.S., Wynton Marsalis.
Well, I just feel like something as central to being human as education, if I have to tell you, you have to beat somebody to be educated, I'm already diminishing your education because the goal is too low. What happens after you beat them? You finish educating yourself? Are you comfortable now? And for a nation to have that expressed at the top of their country by people who are running education and top kind of political figures, it shows a kind of deep and profound lack of attentiveness to the nature of our problems. Our problems in this time is to how do we define our collective experience as Americans? And that can only be expressed through culture. That's why you see the type of divisiveness you see in our political arenas. Nobody knows how to actually work together. Benny Goodman showed you how to do that in 1938. Duke Ellington showed you how to do that his entire career. But if you don't know these achievements, Walt Whitman was telling you about that in the 19th century. Women's rights. All the rights we talk about now, this man was talking about that in 1850. So because we don't know that heritage and that history, we're constantly reinventing the wheel and we're constantly fighting over things that have been settled. One day we'll wake up to it, to the value of arts education, not the name, but the substance of the greatest achievements that we have in this country and our greatest artists, and the actual substance, not their name, the substance of Duke Ellington. It touches people. It transforms their lives. It brings us closer together. It makes us understand the meaning of and it helps us to welcome people who come to our country seeking another type of identity so they don't feel like they have to come here and reestablish their country on our soil. And, you know, our country's had a blood-stained, hard-fought history, but we have the history we have, and we have the arts that we have. And there have been many contributors to it. So it's been my life mission, and many, many people, certainly our institution, Jazz at Lincoln Center, we're about elevating the consciousness of our country through the use of our music. And it's a beautiful tool for that.
Okay. It's about as good as it gets, right?
It's good stuff. Wynton's awesome.
Yeah, he's such a great evangelist of music education. We'll get to some of those themes, but I thought just playing that up teased this discussion up really, really well for the impact on music education here. Okay, Jason, thank you for being here. We're looking forward to hearing a little bit about your experience in music. Tell us a little bit about your first memory that you had in music.
This is such a topic that is so close to my heart, but my first memory, I'm going to say two. The first one is my grandfather was a farmer, a rancher, a dam builder, a grunt labor guy, a scrapper. He was that guy, but he loved music, and in his later years, he had a dance band that would play a lot of the old 1930s and 40s dance music.
Oh, wow.
We would go up to, he ended up with a cattle ranch later in his life, and we'd go up to the ranch for a week or two at a time, and he would teach me how to play the saxophone.
Oh.
Right there in the ranch, we'd work all day, we'd go play the saxophone at night. So that's the first deeply, deeply wow. powerful, foundational memory that I have of music. And how music can bring joy. The other one is I remember a piano teacher taking us to Gamage to hear Handel's Messiah one year.
Oh,
and I remember being bored out of my mind for the entire time. I was like 10 years old or something, right?
Yeah.
And falling asleep for part of it and right on the front row. But then the big chorus finale at the end kicks in and everybody stands up. And I was electrified.
Wow.
That adrenaline rush that is so powerful with music, where just this spiritual, emotional rush just comes over you and you feel like you're in touch with the divine.
Wow.
And for a 10-year-old kid, I had no idea how to put words to that, but it electrified me, changed me forever. And from then on, I've never lost that hunger to feel that feeling. And I've felt it many, many times since, but those two experiences.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks for sharing that story. And we're going to tell some fun stories. Do you remember your first music experience? I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit.
But. No, that's okay. I grew up in a home with, you know, music playing. My parents didn't necessarily play an instrument around the house, But same with the grandparents. I remember my grandmother always playing Elvis Presley.
Oh, Elvis.
She was a huge Elvis fan. And then my other grandmother, more like classical. And actually, she is a classical pianist. And so my maternal grandmother, always piano music playing in her home, still, she still plays. She has a little neuropathy in her foot. And so the pedal's a little difficult, but she still plays.
That's fun. Elva, you know, when I thought, you probably remember my 50th birthday, I put a little birthday party together and no gifts, just bring books. It was a book drive for a library I was building at one of our schools. And I just went through all the decades of my life, 5 at the time, and all the music that influenced my life in that decade. And the very first music that I could ever remember was Elvis. I hate to admit it, but that's the truth. Hound Dog. That was the first song that I remember listening to. And anyways, but Jason, so your grandpa taught you to play the sax. I don't know if I've heard that. You and I have known each other for quite a while now, and we've done some fun music projects together. And I know your studio is named after Talmadge. Is that why?
Yeah, that's correct. His name is Talmadge, and that's why. And my first name is actually Talmadge too.
Oh,
I just go by Jason, but yeah, that's why I named the studio Talmadge.
Okay, so take us a little bit through your music journey, and what maybe just hit on some of the highlights that you've done so far, so our listeners know a little bit more about your music background.
I think really foundational to me beyond that experience with my grandfather and that experience with that piano teacher, school music was a powerful experience for me. It wasn't right out of the gate powerful for me. You know, mm-hmm. all kids, when they're in fifth grade, sixth grade, they're kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then I got into junior high, and Larry Badke, who you know.
Yeah.
You were in his bands, right?
I was,
yeah. In junior high at Poston. Yeah. He invited me to be a part of this thing. I didn't really even know what it was, called the jazz band.
Oh, wow.
And so I started playing the saxophone in the jazz band, and all of a sudden that light bulb goes off, that thing happens where it clicks in your head and you say, whoa, this is really
what
fun.
What just happened to me?
This is really fun. I want more of this. So that kept going. And then we moved to Gilbert after ninth grade. And the band director there was Phil Hatler, and he was big into the marching band. And I went to him before school started. I said, I don't want to be in marching band, but I want to be in jazz band.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you're going to be in jazz band, you're going to be in marching band.
Marching band.
So I was in the marching band, which that turned into a whole nother, you know, experience. And the rush of that was the experience of, you know, 100, 120 kids on a field, just giving it all they got to drive power and emotion through music and achievement and excellence and all that. And so I ended up being the drum major by my senior year, so I totally embraced the marching band, even though I thought I was going to hate it. I turned out to love it.
Enjoy,
But as you can see there, music in the schools is that connection and that touch with music that becomes foundational. And as time went on, I actually wanted to be Phil Hatler and Larry Badke, so I went to school to be a band director and got my degree in instrumental music because I saw the change that happened in me as a result of being part of school music, and I wanted to be able to provide that same kind of experience and change for other people.
Well, I think that's one of the points that Winton is arguing. If you want to elevate the dialogue in America, elevate the culture, and music is a way to harmonize, no pun intended, right? Or maybe pun intended. That's how the whole design of music is, to get along and work together, is what I think he's arguing there. Whereas sports in some ways is teamwork, but there's a competitive element to that is somewhat off-putting, or can be. But
yeah, you know, listening to Winton's comments, and before I go there, just think about that marching band experience or playing in an orchestra. I got to end up playing in an orchestra, played the timpani and different random things.
Oh,
but think about that experience about being with a lot of other people. And you're not trying to win anything or beat anybody, but you're trying to create something of beauty and value, and you're doing it together. And that rush of everybody just hitting that big note right at the same time, and everybody's playing their role. There's such power in that in terms of learning culturally and socially how to go function in the world and be part of something bigger than yourself in the world. But if you listen to what Winton was talking about, he talked about how the history of our culture and the history of our nation is very, very deeply ingrained in the music, because so often people don't, you know, there's definitely a thing where music is just made to be kind of background wallpaper. But more often than not, way more often than not, music is created to make a statement, to say something about a time or a political event or an emotion. And you think how music carried people through, you know, different parts of our cultural strife that's happened and our political strife that's happened through the many evolutions of our national history and our national culture. So that's powerful. So when you think about the importance of music in schools, you're teaching history, and history is fundamental to a strong and a vibrant and a healthy society, because that's how we learn how to make a better future and not how to go back and do the dumb things we did in the past or do better on the good things we did in the past.
That reminds me, I took a history class and they wanted us to write about a certain event. And I wrote about 1968. Now, you remember that was a big, that was a trial in American history, right? Lots of revolts. The Black Panthers are very active in Northern California. There were riots in Chicago. And out of that year came one of the greatest songs ever. That's when What a Wonderful World was composed. And a guy out of New York was trying to get it out in, and they found this guy that no one heard of named Louis Armstrong. And, hey, you sing this. And they're like, and the U.S. really didn't. Like, they were all wrapped up in the acrimony and hate of the you know, 1968. So we went to London, and it became the smash hit. And then the Americans were like, hey, wait a minute. But it was almost a healing balm in some ways for our country, you know, that particular song that came out. Anyways, I wrote a little story about, you know, the power of music in healing our country out of a time of trial like 1968. But let's talk. You touched on the classroom. Let's give us a little history lesson here of music education, at least in the American classroom experience. And what have you seen? And a couple observations there.
Yeah, I can talk about where it's been, and I can also talk about where I think it has the potential to go, and probably already is going. First of all, why do we even have music education? Well, first of all, to answer that, why do we even have music? We don't need music to survive. We don't need it to have food on our table. We don't need it to have a roof over our head necessarily. There's a bigger reason that we have music in our culture and in our lives. And it's, I think music is one of the most basic human hungers with all the other arts. We hunger as human beings to have something that gives us hope, that gives us purpose, that gives us something to feel greater than just the effort to survive and subsist. So that's what music does for us culturally. Well, why do we have that in our schools then? Is it just some kind of tangential curiosity that's, you know, an extracurricular fun thing that we do just for...
Keep people busy.
Just keep people busy? Or is it as equally core and foundational to the whole learning process as is math, as is literature, as is science? And I emphatically believe that it's along with the other arts, that music is absolutely core and foundational to that. Now, there's a lot of cognitive reasons why that's the case. And there's a lot of studies that we don't have time to get into today, but there's just no end of studies out there that talk about how music from a cognitive standpoint is this awesome way to kind of merge the right brain, left brain, you know, the technical thing with the artistic abstract thing. And in fact, later on in life, I went on to become a technology company startup guy, did a .com. And I noticed how important it was to merge the technical complicated stuff with the artistic abstract stuff. And I traced that back to music as being a core part of that. But
you were talking about the left brain, right brain, and there's a lot of clinical stuff that we could bring in. But there's a short little TED talk with illustrations with research by Anita Collins, who's a music researcher, and they talk about what's happening in the brain. And now with technology, we can see in real time what's happening, and it like increases volume and like productivity of the corpus callosum by those hemispheres of our brain bridging. And so your brain is actually improving each time you play an instrument, which I thought was pretty cool.
It's the absolute truth. And that's an awesome study. And I'd love to, there's a lot of other awesome studies, but you think about what's happening. You take a fifth grade kid or an eighth grade kid, and what's really going on with that music education. First of all, they have a tactile experience going on, you know, flute, saxophone, piano, whatever it is. They have a tactile experience. So there's motor skills that are involved. That's technical. There's some left brain stuff going on in there. But they're also having to read these notes and count these measures. You know, that's also technical. That's also left brain. Yeah. But now they have to know dynamics. Come in soft, loud, with some emotion and some phrasing. Now we're in the right brain. So you're trying to translate these left brain technical, tactile skills into a creative thing. And now you expand that out to, I'm the trombone player. I have to listen to the clarinet player and make sure I don't overpower. Mm-hmm. Think about what that means culturally, socially, to know how to moderate your voice so that it blends with these other people. So now I'm deep, deep, deep in the right brain. And that's that bridge. It's so music.
The creative and the technical, right? Like logical meet together. Yeah, and also all the parts of the brain, you have the auditory, the visual, and the motor all working together when you're playing an instrument. So you got the whole brain activity happening. Well, and I love what you said about socially, how students like learn to understand that through music. So I haven't thought about that. I like how even in elementary school, right, that you might practice an instrument and think, oh, I've mastered Mary Had a Little Lamb. But then as you play it with other students and you learn how coming together to build something beautiful, that's different. That doesn't happen in English class. It doesn't happen in a math class. You're answering questions. You're learning really on an individual basis. And really only the teacher sees each of those components, right, working individually. And so I think, I just think it's so important early on for students to learn that, you know, my part mixed with your part, mixed with your part, all come together to make something beautiful. Yeah. And it can bridge, like, we're just a melting pot, right? United States, we have people immigrated from everywhere. I know we've all had experiences where we have maybe not had a lot in common with those around us, but music bridges those gaps. I know we've kind of gone from, like, improving your brain function, cognitive function, to, like, the social, emotional, but...
Let me just add, on the way into school today, my wife and my 13-year-old daughter, she's in seventh grade, just finishing up. In fact, today's the last day. Diane was reading her grades. She's getting straight A's. Now, people don't know that she started off with a pretty serious speech delay. She got a lot of help on that. She was on an IEP for a little bit. She worked really hard at it. She really struggled in math. She struggled with focus. What people know is her as the little musician. She was around a campfire just a couple weeks ago with a guitar, just entertaining the whole campfire. She's having a great time. People were doing a fun sing-along. She plays the saxophone. She loves the saxophone. She switched to French horn and then went back. She plays the piano. We have no doubt in our home that really helped her with focus, helped her with the things that really needed her to develop to be successful in these other areas. And so when I heard that this morning, I thought, oh, wow, that's just great. And did music solve all that? No. You know, she had to discipline herself in math and reading and things like that. But all of those work together, which is, I think, the point here that we're driving home.
Well, and the different kind of some different topics we've discussed over the months is how to build confidence in youth in the classroom.
Big, huge.
And that's one of the things is I've seen, even during COVID, my daughter's elementary school, the choir teacher wanted to develop some instrument program in their school. And so he got a bunch of different types of recorders, altos. I didn't know there was different types of recorders. Yeah. I thought there was just the one. And they made a recorder band and they went performed at Knott's Berry Farm and won like an exceptional rating. And she gained this confidence in herself. And I saw that express itself in academics as well. And so I thought that was so interesting. But I've seen that.
Well,
also.
I think some children like mine would just die if they did not have music as a piece. Doesn't have to be whole of the education in their day. I want to go back to a point you made, Jason, real quick, because I think you touched on one of the major philosophical divisions in education in the whole history, all the way back to Socrates. And I'm not going to take too much time on that, but Socrates really focused on the inner person, right? An unexamined life is not worth living is something he would argue. He really talked about developing the inner person and the character. And, you know, one of his students, Plato was a student, but Aristotle developed it a little bit more in saying that there's really two real big theses in life, right? There's the goods of first intent and then second intent, right? The goods of second intent are the technical nature of things, medicine, business, law, things that we need to keep bread on our table.
Subsistence.
Subsistence, right? But there's a higher order to things. There's things that are more important: beauty, friendship, love, family, you know, things like that. Those are the things that we have the second order for, right? We study law and business so that we can have beautiful friendships and we can have music and art, right? John Adams expressed that in a different way. But throughout education in Western civilization, there's been this tension, which I think is a little bit silly because it doesn't need to be like that. But you have the technical people talk down on the people that are in the arts, and the arts people don't understand the technical people. But the pendulum kind of swings back and forth. And what's important for people to know is, hey, both are important. And I agree with Aristotle. One is actually more important than the other. I think beauty and art and friendship is more important than the technical skills. We can argue that sometime. But anyways, but yeah, definitely music education touches on those higher order things in our civilization that we just absolutely can't lose.
Well, let's translate what you just said into the rest of life. And by the way, music is a powerful way to accomplish all these things. Sports is also a very powerful way to accomplish many of these things. I will say, like your daughter, there, you know, some kids just connect with music and arts much more than they do with sports. And so you just need to create all the venues and all the opportunities for to, you know, meet kids where they are. Yeah. And for some kids, that's sports. For some kids, that's music. But let's take what you just said about these, I call it the subsistence order and the higher joyful order. What do you call them?
I think I've heard a good of first and second intent. People probably call it different things, but first intent, like, why are we here? What is the purpose of life?
Let's translate that in other parts of life. Mm-hmm. So obviously music is core and foundational to my life, but I've gone on to do other things in my life to both provide for my family and just to do other things. I've been a technology entrepreneur and for the last 20 years, I've been a land developer.
Okay.
So what does that mean? As a land developer, the outcome of my work is that things get built. And why do they get built? They get built because people need somewhere to live. They need somewhere to drive. That's the road. They need somewhere to shop. They need somewhere to go to a restaurant, you know, that sort of thing. So if you think about all the things that I deal with on a daily basis as a land developer, I deal with some very subsistence level technical stuff. Water lines, sewer lines, flood control, drainage, drainage basins. Those are very mathematical. And they're needed so that we don't die, so that we have a place to have a roof over our head.
Yeah.
But then there's this whole other level of people want more than just a fundamental roof over the head. I've been to Romania. I know what
subsistence. Well, yeah.
I know what subsistence level housing and community looks like, and it's ugly and it's bleak. We want beauty in our homes. We want beauty in our neighborhoods. We want parks. We want landscaping. We want beauty in the architecture to inspire us. And you think about some of the great architecture, what the inspiration is that comes from that. And so there's just one domain where you need both orders of thinking, both orders of aspiration. You need that subsistence level. You need those sewer lines to work. You need the water lines to deliver water. But you need a beautiful home and you need a beautiful community. Now translate that into any other discipline, any other domain, and those principles apply. We need, as human beings, more than just to subsist. We need inspiration, we need joy, we need aspiration, we need beauty. And that's where music is just one of the great, great learning grounds where that can happen. And the school academic setting is a critical place for that to happen. And that's why I fundamentally believe that music sits side by side with, you know, the STEM, the science, the math, the, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's not just those things.
I thought the M in STEM was music.
It is. I'm glad you see that.
Yeah, that's right. Math is a derivative of music, right?
It actually is. You know, the great music theorist that really brought to human knowledge how music even works from a physics and a technical standpoint, yeah, is Pythagoras. Who's also the Pythagorean theorem and all the other great mathematical principles that that were founded with him and his peers. He's the great music theorist that taught us how a string vibrates and where the notes come from.
And if anybody knows anything about technical music, you know it's all math and radio waves.
It's all math and overtones, and it's a fascinating world. But where it gets really fascinating when you can take the physics and transform it to art.
That's the big leap.
That's the fascination.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, talk about today. Where do you see music education today, in the future? What are some
This is some so important to me and a critical question. And I have to preface the answer by reinforcing how important traditional education is. So I pulled up to your school today.
Okay.
And I see a truck outside with a bunch of kids loading timpanis in the back of the truck. And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. This is a good school.
You know who that director is. We're going to go over to his band afterwards. Maybe he can say hi.
That's Kerwin. That's Kerwin.
He played with Kerwin.
I played saxophone in the band with him sitting behind me in the trombone section. So yeah, that whole figuring out a balance, you know, between, you know, the different instruments. Kerwin and I, we've got experience with that.
He's great.
He's awesome. But I pull up and I see the timpanis in the back, and it brings back this flood of memories and images. And to me, that's the traditional music. And it's essential. To me, the evolution of music, certainly from Johann Sebastian Bach, he's kind of the pivot point. There's a ton of music history that comes before him that's incredibly important. But in terms of Western civilization, the epitome of Western civilization, it begins with J.S. Bach. And then it evolves all the way through Mozart and Beethoven and through Brahms and through Mahler. Mahler is so important. And then it works its way over to the United States with Copland and other things. That is the culmination, one of the key culminations of Western civilization. And it's an art form of the highest order that must be taught, must be preserved. And so when I see timpanis in the back of a truck at Heritage Academy, I'm saying, okay, the lineage is being preserved. Yeah. But music is a constantly evolving thing. Mahler didn't exist when Beethoven was writing the Ninth Symphony. But Mahler went back and listened carefully to the Ninth Symphony to know where to go with the Second Symphony that he wrote, you know, about the resurrection. That's the greatest symphony to me is the Mahler Second. But then that would evolve into what Copland did. And if you look at the modern music today, most people in modern American culture don't connect with Beethoven or Mahler or Shostakovich or Copland. They connect with Taylor Swift. They connect with the Beatles. They connect with Alan Jackson. George Strait just came out with a new song. They connect with that. Okay. Is there something artistically or culturally different or less about Taylor Swift or any of that? That's a whole debate to be had. What I'm interested in is where are people culturally connecting and how do we make music education relevant to where music is and where it's going? The fact of the matter is music has changed dramatically over the past certainly 50 years since the Beatles. Certainly over the past 20 years with the advent of technology. You look at the technology that we're using here today with these microphones and with this system that you have down here to produce your podcast. That's technology that didn't exist 20 years ago.
That's amazing.
And some of the most prominent, culturally prominent, Grammy-winning music that's being created today is being created in people's bedrooms with a microphone just like this one. Jacob Collier uses that exact same microphone, this Shure microphone we're using today, in his bedroom to make Grammy-winning records, and a little laptop. So the power of music has evolved dramatically. So the question is, what has the traditional academic curriculum in the traditional school setting done to incorporate that in to make modern music creation more relevant while still embracing and perpetuating this incredibly important lineage that goes from Bach to Beethoven to Mahler to Shostakovich and all that. When I'm growing up, the instruments were the saxophone, the trombone, the timpani. But guess what? In today's world, those are still part of the instrumentation, but this microphone is now part of the instrumentation. The computer, the laptop is now part of the instrumentation. That's an instrument that needs to be learned just like any of the other instruments. So that's where I see it going. And then you layer on top of that, just from the standpoint of learning You think what YouTube and social media has done to the learning experience. It used to be that you had to read a book or sit in a classroom to learn a lot of this stuff. You still need that. You still need that real living teacher to be that inspiration and that driver and the person to kind of pull it together. But why not lean hard and heavy into all these resources that are out there? There are some brilliant teachers out there now on YouTube that can light and inspire people about traditional rock music, traditional classical music, jazz. Wynton Marsalis, who we're talking about, is just one of the greatest evangelists of all, but there's so many others out there. Why not lean into that and have that pulled into the traditional academic classroom?
That's huge. Yeah, it seems like it's a major catalyst. And I want to ask you about AI in a little bit too, because that'll be that. But did I ever tell you the story when the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra came here? They used to do an education event in Mesa, Arizona all the time with the big Mesa Arts Center. And they would invite a bunch of schools to participate in their jazz clinic. And some of the schools they would actually send their people out to. And they had Marcus Printup, one of their great trumpet players.
I remember.
And
yeah.
Christopher Crenshaw, their trombone player. Those guys came over to Heritage and did a 2-hour clinic, which was just mind-blowing. I mean, the young people loved it. And they loved it so much, and they loved our program so much. They said, hey, this was in the fall. They said, so what else you got going? And we said, well, we got a football game tonight. You want to come out? And they said, can we play the national anthem? And those two guys were out there, and we're a very small school, and it was a dirt track, and here are these guys from New York play the national anthem for our faculty, and I don't know that we even fully appreciated it. And they sat there and watched the first half of the game, and then they had to take off and get some stuff done, but they played with the little pep band that was there. And when we talk about developing the culture and things like that, you're right, our minds are quite limited in ways, but their outreach program is just second to none. I don't know if they picked that up after COVID or not, but I think that's also part of music education, is getting out and seeing stuff. I remember an old band director that I had at Shepherd Junior High, Tom Casseri. Did you ever know Tom Casseri?
No.
He was more in the like Kino Westwood area. He pulled us out of school one time and he says, we're going to take you to go see Clark Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Clark Terry.
Played with Duke Ellington.
Ellington, yeah. He was at Mountain View High School in Mesa, and he invented the mumbles.
True legend, yeah.
What do you call it? A feature, I guess, in jazz, a mumble. Anyways, and he did the mumbles for us, and I know I didn't totally understand that, but getting out and seeing jazz, whether it's through YouTube or live events, are just so great, instead of always thinking of music education as composition and theory, which is important, but immersing yourself also is still very, very important.
What you've just hit on is something that's really important, and that is the critical role of the human being teacher connection in the learning process. So what I mean by that is music is something that gets passed from generation to generation, almost like word of mouth.
Grandpa Talmadge.
Yeah. And so you talk about you talk about the jazz tradition. That is America's, one of America's great, great contributions to the world and to culture, is the jazz tradition, which I love deeply. Now it's a little bit more codified. You can go to a school and you can kind of learn in a kind of a structured curriculum what jazz is about. But for most of the history of that jazz history coming together, it was Duke Ellington teaching Clark Terry, teaching, you know, Miles Davis, teaching Freddie Hubbard, teaching, you know, just move it right on down the line.
It's a pedigree.
It's a pedigree, and it's that teaching, and you can't replace that. I talk about how important it is to use technology and YouTube and different things like that, because it kind of gives you another level. It gives you a kind of a reach. You know, some kid growing up in Mesa in the 1970s, you know, what would I have done if I'd had more reach into music than what I had at the time? It would have been a real blessing for me. But it's that human interaction. That's where the inspiration comes from. And that's why the classroom teacher is so critical. You cannot replace the role of the classroom teacher, because that is the person, the band director, the orchestra director, the choir director. Those are the people who help light that fire. Remember, it was Larry Badke who lit my fire. It was my piano teacher who knew to take me to the Messiah concert who lit my fire. I you know, can you get that from YouTube? You can get that enhanced by that, but you can't replace that. In fact, I had there's a guy who came and did a clinic for us when I was at MCC 30 something years ago, and I was super inspired by what he did, what he said, how he thought about life, how he thought about music. He was here in town about 2 months ago for a concert.
Oh, nice.
I went over to see it, and I pulled him aside after the concert, and I said, I want you to know what you did for me. Thank you.
That's great.
And that's the thing that any music teacher, they'll never know the thousands and thousands of people that they've touched in that way.
Thank you for joining us for part one of Music Education with Jason Barney. We hope you'll join us for part two.